VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Crosstalk here on VCY America. If you've been on a roller coaster, you likely have been bumped around with steep inclines and declines, fast curves, sometimes even being tossed upside down. Well, I'm not a roller coaster enthusiast by any sense of the word. Some years ago, as my children were in teenage years, I let them each pick out a ride for me that they wanted me to go on. Two of them chose various roller coasters, and I remember entering the ride, getting secured in my seat, and was going to need to brace myself as this was going to be a wild ride. Well, in a very parallel way, here in 2022, we are very much on such a ride with all that's unfolding, not only on the national scene, but also on the international scene. And that same thought hits you, that we've got to brace ourselves. Our guest today has written such an article on this very topic, and he's going to unfold it through our broadcast today. We welcome back to Crosstalk Gary Kah, the founder and director of Hope for the World. Gary is editor of the Hope for the World Update, also a former Europe and Middle East trade specialist for the Indiana state government. He is the author of books En Route to Global Occupation and also The New World Religion. Gary, thank you for joining us on the broadcast.
Hi, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Gary, you received a message from a Christian friend in early June 2022 in which he said, "Send out the warnings. It will be a difficult summer in the U.S." You received this from a person in the know. What can you tell us about this person, and what was he referring to?
Well, he's been in the military in an area that involves intelligence and high technology. We have met on a number of different occasions, face-to-face. He's very concerned about different things going on, as are other people. But having to be careful, who they share what with. We're getting a lot of this actually right now, Jim. People from all over the place knowing that, I do regular programs like yours, and they're just trying to get the information out. But because of their jobs, they're in a situation where they can't do much or say much.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're almost being overwhelmed right now. So much is going on at the same time. And so this particular friend, I've known him for quite some time. I don't want to give out too much as far as where, the area they live in and that type of thing. But he has consistently been right on target and is a very sound person. He is a believer, a Christian believer, and believes that our country overall has been headed down the wrong path, although we are, obviously thrilled about the Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision here recently. But because of everything going on overall, we both feel that the globalists are going to use even that decision to try to cause more calamity and chaos and division and a lot of the extreme riots that have begun in different parts of the country. It's probably just the beginning. It's going to get worse, and some of these groups are being funded by the same old sources, that a couple summers ago were funding the upheaval then. So I think that's what he had in mind when he sent the message to me that he did. And we're beginning to see that play out now.
Do you believe, Gary, that there are those who are deliberately trying to take down our nation?
I do. I do believe that what we are witnessing, in at least with some people within the Biden administration, we know that Joe Biden isn't all there. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude in the least. I actually feel sorry for the man. He's being given script cards on everything he does and every move he makes. So he has handlers. He has people around him telling him what to do. And I believe many of those advisors are of a radical, far-left, globalist worldview. And in order to bring all of this about, this new world order, this great reset that they're committed to, the U.S. as we know it has to be dismantled. And so everything we're seeing is part of that agenda. But really, they're kind of between a rock and a hard spot themselves, because if the faster they move to try to take everything down, the worse things get and the more American people wake up. And if things drag on to the election, then it could backfire because others could be voted in that try to undo this agenda. So that, in a sense, has them speeding up even more to try to get as much as possible, if not everything, done before the election, for fear that it could be overturned if we make to the election. So there's this real battle going on right now, and they're trying to use every decision made to inflame the left and try to cause chaos. Really, that's the bottom line. It's chaos in every area of our lives to get people to the point where they throw up their hands and say, you know, this is hopeless. And then they'll step on the scene with their great reset plan and say, hey, we've got the answer. Here it is. Global government with a cashless, digital, global economic system, and everything's going to be global. That's the solution they want.
Gary Kahn with us here today on Crosstalk. Gary, you indicate that before the American people are willing to embrace this new socialist world order, this great reset, so to speak, that this nation must be brought to their knees. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah, as I was just saying, to take it a step further, as long as people can function relatively comfortably, I believe a majority of Americans would not be keen on stepping into a new world order that limits a lot of their freedoms. But if things get really drastic, if there are major food shortages, energy shortages, more supply chain disruptions to where you can't get a lot of what you're used to getting, and then add to that possibly another pandemic and even more extreme restrictions being imposed than in the last one, you get people so frustrated that one of two things would happen. They either completely rebel, in which case you could see a type of war type setting where the far left and the far right are pitted against each other. And quite frankly, Jim, if that happens, in my opinion, our foreign adversaries would probably attack us from the outside. They would attack us at our weakest moment. That would be our weakest moment. So then on the other hand, you have the possibility that people get so frustrated they just finally capitulate and give in to the, you know, to the new world order. So neither option is good. Really what we need is a massive, unprecedented repentance and turning back to God and looking to God to intervene on our behalf.
You know, some look at the major players who appear to be destroying our nation, and people wonder how inept can they be. But you indicate that those who are driving this one-world agenda are not stupid. They're evil.
Exactly. I mean, you have to conclude that, right? I mean, I saw a survey, probably it's been at least 5 years ago now, maybe closer to 10 years. It was most interesting, and I wish I would have written down the numbers right then, but it went something like this. At that time, people with a high school degree and nothing more, a minority of them embraced the idea of same-sex marriage. I'm just using one moral issue as an example. Mm-hmm. Those with a college degree, it was close to half. Those with a master's degree, it was like 60%+. And those with a doctorate degree, it was, if I remember right, close to 80%. And so what I came away with looking at that example is that the more people have been exposed to higher education, the more liberal they become, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And the more they move away from God and taking the Bible anywhere close to literally. And I believe that's what we're facing here. A lot of these people are intellectuals from the Northeast and from California. They think those of us who are Christians who actually believe the Bible are a bunch of idiots. And they've rejected the God of the Bible. They believe they're moving the world in a direction that, in their opinion, is going to be sustainable. But, oh, by the way, we have to get rid of a big part of the world's population to make it sustainable. And the only way you can do that, really, is either through increasing wars, pandemics, or, you know, starvation. I mean, those are all, anything else would fall under those three categories. And so only an evil mind would come up with that. You can't believe that they're stupid and making these kinds of decisions, taking us in this direction when they articulate from the universities down, the thinking behind it. In other words, they understand, I think, to a large extent what the ramifications are, at least in this world, but they reject the spiritual side of things. So if you take on an occultic or humanistic worldview, you can justify and rationalize just about anything. You know, the end justifies the means, and that's what we're looking at here.
So this biblical worldview or a Christian worldview, it's just not part of this narrative, is it, going forward?
It is not part of this narrative. The way is too narrow for them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll support interfaithism, the idea that all religions are pathways to God, and nominal Christians, people who call themselves Christians, but actually go along with interfaithism, which means you're really not a Christian at all, because, you know, you either believe what Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and life, no man comes unto the Father except through me, or you reject it. What Jesus did was completely unique. He died on the cross, rose again, and claimed to pay the penalty for man's sins. No other religion does that. So the teachings of the Bible regarding Christ, who he was, what he did, are completely opposed to the other world religions that have other pathways to immortality. And really all of this, you can take it all the way back to the beginning. God forbid man from eating of the forbidden fruit. And Satan came along and did what through the serpent? He said, eat of this fruit and you shall be as gods and you shall never die. Well, that's the whole foundation really of pantheism in the Eastern religions. They teach that we can become gods ultimately, and we never die. We just go through reincarnations, and eventually we become so highly evolved that we become a spiritual master ourselves, a spirit being that helps guide the affairs of mankind. That's what Eastern mysticism teaches. That's what the core beliefs of the New Age movement teach. And so it completely runs contrary to the teachings of the Bible that teach there's a finality, there's a judgment. We're all going to stand before God, and to pass through that judgment and have eternal life in heaven with God, with Christ, the only way is through Jesus and believing that he paid the penalty for our sins.
Amen.
So,
Gary, you wrote an article here recently called Brace Yourselves, and you wrote this prior to the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization decision that came down from the Supreme Court June 24th. But here's what you said. You indicated that this decision could send the abortion issue back to the states. If so, expect thousands of radical liberals to take to the streets. Gary, that's exactly what we've been seeing since that leak came out, and even more so since the June 24th decision.
Exactly. And I wrote this about 10 days before the decision. It went in the mail a day or two before. Some people are just getting this today, the hard copies around the country. And we're seeing this unfold, you know, on television, I mean, in some unexpected places. And because they didn't know exactly when the ruling was going to come out, it threw them a little bit for a loop. And I think it was smart by the justices not to say, okay, on this day we're going to make this announcement. Mm-hmm. So I expect over the next week or so we'll see some of the rioting pick up. I wrote in the article, I said, some of these same people who march for animal rights, protection of the environment, and social justice will fight for the so-called right to kill defenseless human beings.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there ever interbreeding between species?
Indeed there is, Chris. To illustrate this, let's talk about dogs. We know that in domestic dogs there are many different breeds, and some of them are very different, from Great Danes to Chihuahuas, but all of them are interfertile. They're all part of the same species. The Bible tells us that God created the various kinds, and the dog kind, no doubt, included the domestic dogs. But it evidently also included the wolf and the fox and the coyote, because all of them can interbreed. Now I find that even jackals have been interbred with domestic dogs. Jackals have a very acute sense of smell, and so breeding them with huskies produced a new dog, which are good sniffer dogs for use at airports. Once again, Chris, we see that the biblical creation story is the one that makes sense, and that's the Back to Genesis truth.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Gary Kai is our guest here today on the broadcast, and we thank you for tuning in to the VCY America Network. Still working through some little glitches here on Crosstalk, but friends, some critical information coming your way here today from Crosstalk and the VCY America Network. Brace yourselves. Gary Kai is our guest. And, Gary, we're going to unfold during this segment here some of the things we have to brace ourselves for that you're writing about. I mean, matter of fact, you bring several issues to the forefront, and one of those issues is entitled The Coming Shortages. Now, you're not only commenting on food, but even energy shortages. If you would comment on this issue of the coming shortages.
Yeah, I decided in this article to hit energy and food big because I think those are going to be the areas of the most shortages. Interesting, you know, the Biden administration has been saying, hey, prepare, there may be some power outages this summer. They haven't told us why, though. This administration's policies have forced the closure of more coal-fired power plants and some nuclear plants. So far in 2022, we're almost at the halfway mark. During the first 6 months of this year, more power plants have closed in this country than in all of the time between 2015 and 2020 combined. So, I mean, they have really been speeding this up.
Wow.
I mean, you think about it. Over a five-year period, fewer plants closed than in the last 6 months alone.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, they're encouraging people to buy electric cars. And so that's just adding to the problem, you know, because the electricity just isn't there for that. And it just doesn't make any sense unless it's intentional. I mean, you can't tell me these people are this dumb, this stupid, that they don't realize what they're bringing about here. There's going to be a huge energy shortage. Gasoline right now is leveled off. In most places, it's around $5. We traveled this weekend, and it was anywhere from $4.74 to around $5.30 a gallon.
Hmm.
But if you live on the coast, it's already $7 and even $8 in some places. And so I don't think it's going to go way down anytime soon. They're just putting little Band-Aids on here and there, you know, that give a little bit of relief for a couple of weeks, and then it goes right back up. And then there's the whole food thing. You know, you can live without a lot of things, but without food, things get real difficult real fast. In February, right before the Ukraine war broke out, just a couple weeks before, a friend of mine who owns a large farm and is also politically well-connected and informed specifically called me to give me a heads up. And he said, Gary, they're going to weaponize food. Get ready. They're going to weaponize food. And then he went on to share a couple of things because I asked him, well, what do you mean? Give me an example of some of what's happening. And he shared this following story, and I share this in my article. He said a friend of his from church who also owned a large farm died unexpectedly of a heart attack. And then a few weeks after he died, two men showed up at his widow's door after offering their condolences. They asked her how much money she would like for her farm, assuming that she wanted to sell it now so that, you know, now that she was a widow and probably wouldn't want to run such a big operation by herself. So she quickly responded. She said she had no interest in selling. The men asked, but if you were to sell, what would you want for the farm? In other words, just pretend. And so after some time, she reluctantly gave them amount. And these men then promptly offered her way more than that. They actually bid up the price just to kind of seal the deal, you know, and make it almost impossible for her to turn it down. And my friend went on to tell me that this type of land grab by huge corporate conglomerates is taking place throughout North America, not just the United States, but Canada as well. And as it turned out in this instance, the two men worked for a company owned by China. So the fact is more and more of America's farms are owned or controlled by Chinese front organizations, as are many of our food processing plants, especially in the area of meat production, a huge problem. You know, you don't want China, of all countries, to own or even strongly influence our food industry. But we've allowed this to take place over the last 15 to 20 years, and now we're in a real predicament. So walk through this with me for a moment. Think through this. If China is under contract to have a lot of our grains exported to them, then in theory, you could have more than enough food grown in this country, but a lot of it is going to be shipped under obligation to China and other places overseas. That's part of the problem. But even a bigger problem is that those who are doing the shipping and who are growing the food are actually Chinese-owned right from the get-go in our country.
Wow.
And then you add to that the war in Ukraine. You've got a lot of Ukrainian farmers that have not been able to plant their crops this spring because of the war. But not only that, they've got massive amounts of grain sitting in their ports, but Russia's not allowing it to go out. And in addition to that, Russia, who is also a large producer of grains, in some cases with some countries, they're not shipping any more to them either because of the being on opposite sides of the war with Ukraine. And so there's that. And then it gets worse, unfortunately. Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus together supply over 30% of the resources used globally to make fertilizer. So I think we're not going to feel the full brunt of that yet this year because I think there's enough stockpile of fertilizer perhaps, but we're really going to feel that in 2023 if this war drags on, because with a much diminished amount of fertilizer internationally, you know, you're going to have less crops coming out of the ground, maybe 5 or 10% or something like that, just from that alone. And then I can keep going. The biggest one is yet to come. Do you want me to go for it, Jim?
Well, it's something called DEF fluid, and I'd like you to tell us, what is this DEF fluid?
Yeah, I just found out about this as well recently, and this is one that hasn't been discussed yet in the media at all, to the best of my knowledge. DEF fluid stands for diesel exhaust fluid. And every diesel truck that's been built since 2010 is required to use it. It's a product made of 67% urea fertilizer and 33% distilled water. So, of course, if there's a fertilizer shortage in the world, it's going to affect and directly impact the production of DEF fluid. Russia, of course, is the largest exporter of urea by a wide margin.
Wow.
Egypt and China are tied for third, and both Russia and China have decided to no longer export urea. So I don't need to tell you how much pressure that puts on the global market regarding diesel exhaust fluid. So to drive it home to this country, first of all, we're the third largest importer in the world of diesel exhaust fluid, and Flying J Truck Stops is the largest service provider for truckers of diesel exhaust fluid. Flying J provides about 30% of all DEF consumed in the United States, so keep that in mind. It's close to a third. Flying J gets 70% of their DEF fluid from shipments via Union Pacific Railroad. So Union Pacific has single-user access to the fertilizer plants that urea, DEF fluid, comes from. And so they have kind of a lock. Union Pacific has told Flying J to reduce their shipments by a whopping 50%. And if they do not comply, then they will be completely embargoed. And so what this means is that DEF fluid going through Flying J, being supplied to truckers, is going to be cut way down. In fact, this is taking place right now. As soon as Flying J stockpiles run out, there's going to be a lot less DEF fluid for truckers. And that's just with Flying J. I don't know how the other truck stops are going to be influenced by this. I imagine they're going to be facing a similar situation. But just through Flying J, I figured out that at a minimal, there's going to be 10% less DEF fluid available nationally, if nothing else beyond what I just shared with you. And so you already have supply chain issues. So now picture at least 10, if not 15% or more, of trucks not being able to drive because of a lack of this fluid. This is going to be chaotic, possibly yet by later this summer. I think it's going to take a while to unfold, but later this year we're going to begin to feel this. To give you an idea of who controls this and who's able to make some of these decisions regarding the lack of fertilizer and urea coming into the country and then deciding what to do as a result of this. Okay, BlackRock is the majority shareholder of Union Pacific Railroad, which is the main shipper of the substance. Also, America's biggest fertilizer producer is CF Industries, because we do make about a third of our supply here in the country, but the main producer is CF Industries. Their largest shareholder is BlackRock. So BlackRock controls the fertilizer industry in the U.S. Union Pacific has exclusive rights to distribution points of this fertilizer. They, you know, have, to a large extent, are controlled by BlackRock. And so that poses a problem, because BlackRock has become one of the major globalist movers and shakers. The chairman of the BlackRock Investment Institute is Tom Donilon, who was President Obama's former national security advisor.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave, Gary. I mean, that's what it sounds like here. This you're unfolding, describing, is like this tangled web.
It is. And just to go one step further yet, Tom Donilon's brother, Mike Donilon, is a senior advisor to Joe Biden. And Tom Donilon's wife, Catherine Russell, is the White House personnel director.
My.
Tom Donilon's daughter now works on the White House National Security Council. So this is direct BlackRock influence right into the White House at the highest level. And they're also tied into this whole DEF thing that's going to be unfolding in a couple of months. That's why I say, it's hard for me to believe that all these people are just naive actors. I mean, it's almost impossible, quite frankly. Now, what I'm hoping is that as this information gets out, that BlackRock decides, you know what, we're going to do everything we can in our power to supply DEF fluid to the country. We're going to move mountains to make it happen, because we don't want to look like the bad guy in all this. I hope that's what happens, because if they put their minds to it, I think they could at least impact this crisis to where it wouldn't be as bad. They might hike up prices. They might see this as a profit opportunity to make more money. As a business, they're likely to do that probably, but maybe they can at least intervene somehow, get some DEF fluid made in other ways here in the U.S. as well as overseas. You know, I mean, we do live in a competitive society to a degree, although monopolies are increasing. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this plays out. But I hope BlackRock will choose very carefully what they do in the next 2 months.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Gary Kah is our guest here today from Hope for the World. By the way, his website, garykah.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute with more information, because as we brace ourselves, it is not only the coming shortages, such as the energy costs, the land grab, the Chinese front organizations, the grain, the DEF fluid, folks, but there's more to come as well. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
From the invention of writing, this world has been mostly ruled by kings. Power which concentrates into the hands of one person often rewards his friends, though, and punishes his enemies. The King of England was the most powerful king this planet had seen. So when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible. A republic where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. How do republics rise and fall? How did 45 countries fall to communist dictators? Are these tactics used in America today? These and other issues are addressed in the book, Who is the King in America? By William Federer. This book provides the reader with an overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Discover the keys to preserving the freedoms of America's Republic. Who is the King in America? It's available for a donation of $18 or more. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. Folks, the theme today, brace yourselves. I mean, we're seeing America's decline. We're seeing world control take place. Gary Ka is unfolding this. Gary is founder and director of Hope for the World. Gary, you put out a newsletter and where you keep those subscribers updated on these issues. For those who would like to obtain information, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can just go to our website, GaryKaah.org, and again, my name is spelled G-A-R-Y-K-A-H, so GaryKaah.org, and you can subscribe there. It is a subscription-based publication. That's how we support ourselves to do this, to keep getting this information out. So you'll be helping us as well when you subscribe. Once you get this thing, just get it out to as many people as you can. That's our goal. It's just to spread this information and inform people as best as we can, all for the glory of God.
Again, folks, as Gary Ka, Ka is spelled K-A-H, GaryKa.org. Brace yourselves, our topic here today, and Gary, another area, and I know we could spend the whole program just on that area, but you're writing about so much more, and another area to brace ourselves is this area of global health governance, and I'd like you to tell us what's going on. We've done programs where we're warning about that World Health Organization, those meetings and the surrender of our sovereignty here as a nation, but break this down for us about this area of global health governance.
Yeah, Jim, this is just another area of targeted manipulation by globalists. You know, if they can control our food and energy and our health, that's pretty much our lives.
Yes.
I mean, that, you know, you can really manipulate people through those areas. And so, again, this is strategic. They want to implement a system of global health governance through the UN's World Health Organization, which, by the way, is also heavily influenced and funded, really by Bill Gates and his allies, within the World Economic Forum, as well as the Vatican. The Vatican's playing a big role in this. A lot of people are not aware of that. And so I have quoted before on this program a Catholic archbishop who's become quite outspoken against developments within the Vatican. His name is Carlo Mario Vigano, and he has served under the last four popes. And he's up in years. Maybe he figures he doesn't have anything to lose. He's just going for it. I don't know, but I agree with most of what he says, speaking out against the Vatican's intentional collaboration with this scheme of global health governance. He wrote on May 21st, just a little over a month ago, the following. I just want to quote him selectively here. He said, "In the coming days, the nations that adhere to the World Health Organization will vote on resolutions regarding the WHO's management of pandemics. These resolutions will transfer sovereignty regarding the health of citizens to a supranational body that is largely financed by the pharmaceutical industry and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. If these resolutions are approved by a majority, the WHO will have exclusive international authority in the case of a pandemic to impose all the rules, including quarantines, lockdowns, obligatory vaccinations, and vaccine passports. It should also be borne in mind that this organization enjoys immunity, and thus its members cannot be either tried or convicted if they commit crimes. Unelected technocrats will paradoxically have more power than that which citizens confer on their representatives by means of their democratic vote." He says, "This attempt by the WHO to appropriate a power that properly belongs to individual nations is intended to impede any sort of opposition to the Agenda 2030,"
wow.
Which he says in another part of this message is the same as the Great Reset and the New World Order. He did praise Donald Trump for halting funding from the U.S. Treasury Department to the WHO, but it didn't stop their agenda. It's just that the U.S. Basically stopped backing them. And then he kind of wraps up his statement, this archbishop. He says, "I exhort heads of state and government leaders who will be called to express their views about the ratification of these resolutions to reject them." He says, "Global health governance is one of the fundamental elements of the New World Order. It must be rejected and opposed. The Holy Say, which is a permanent observer at the United Nations and also at the WHO for 1 year now, which, Jim, I didn't realize that the Vatican is also a permanent observer with the World Health Organization for 1 year now. He says, has the duty to reaffirm the right of individuals to accept or refuse health treatments, especially in the face of the concrete danger of adverse effects, which are still partly unknown, from this experimental genetic treatment. And then he names Bergoglio himself, which is the actual real last name of the Pope, and comes down on him pretty hard. He says, the Roman Sanhedrin, which has made itself an accomplice in a crime against God and man, he says, never in all of history has the hierarchy prostituted itself to temporal power in such a servile and abject way. Let us pray that some bishops will find the courage to distance themselves from Bergoglio's collaborationist line and find the words to open the eyes of those good people who have thus far been deceived by globalist propaganda.
Wow.
And then he signs off. Again, that was on May 21st. And so this is not me saying this. This is coming from a man who's worked at a high level within the Vatican for many years and just can't take it anymore, and is warning the world about the Vatican's involvement in all of this.
And we have done programs on the World Health Organization, things going on, and I understand, Gary, that this global pandemic treaty is still in the works right now, and it's not too far down the road. We're going to find out what's in it.
Yeah, they're pushing it hard. They're finalizing the wording of it that they believe they need to get an international consensus. And then they hope to quickly get it signed, completing the process sometime in 2023 for full implementation in 2024. And that date, we're seeing that a lot, 2024. It seems that they want to keep ramping things up, getting things worse and worse between now and then beginning more or less the implementation process in 2024. I hope that's not the case. You know, a lot can happen between now and then. But as I just told a friend yesterday, it is helpful to know what our adversaries are thinking. And right now it appears they're targeting 2024 to actually roll all of this out in more of a forceful type of way. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yes, and on this issue there is, again, so much more to be said. But, Gary, we're going to move on for sake of time here. Another area that you say we need to brace ourselves, and it's a matter of wars and rumors of wars. So tell us what's going on. We see what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, but it goes well beyond that.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how many people caught this, but Putin spoke to some of his lawmakers on April 27th in Russia, and this following quote is directly from him. He said, "Our response to counter-assaults will be lightning fast. We have all the tools for this, the kind that no one else can boast of right now. We won't brag. We will just use them if needed."
Wow.
End quote. And so, you know, I cringe when I see Western leaders almost mocking Putin, you know, for not being more effective in Ukraine and the fact that Ukraine has, you know, put up a good fight. And they're just almost mocking him. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? This guy sits on top of more nuclear weapons than the rest of the world combined, literally. He has more nuclear weapons at his disposal than the U.S., China, Britain, France, Israel, Pakistan, the rest of the world combined. And we're just kind of mocking him, almost daring him. The same week that Putin made that statement, Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, mentioned once again the possible use of nuclear weapons.
Wow.
That wasn't the first time. In fact, Jim, if anything has surprised me about this Ukraine-Russia war, it was back in the beginning. It was only 3 or 4 days into the war that Putin for the first time mentioned the use of nuclear weapons, if anybody tries anything. That did surprise me that so quickly he brought that up. On Fox News Digital, there was an excellent interview conducted with Rebecca Koffler, a former DIA intelligence officer, and she authored the book Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. And this is what she shared, and this is a direct quote from her. It's quite insightful. She said Putin almost certainly is signaling to Washington that he would use his nuclear trump card if Moscow thinks that it observes any indications and warnings that Ukraine is targeting Russia proper, or if things are about to escalate otherwise. Russia has a preemptive doctrine and views tactical nuclear weapons as a battlefield capability, not simply a deterrent. Koffler continued, "This doctrine is more dangerous than the doctrine that the Soviets adhered to during the Cold War because it views limited nuclear warfare as a viable battlefield option rather than a mere psychological weapon," end quote.
Hmm.
And I agree with that. You know, during the Cold War, we had this view of, we called it MAD, mutually assured destruction.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if, you know, the Russians understood if they try anything, we fire back and it would not be worth it. But since that time, Russia now, they have more of a preemptive mindset that if they need to use a nuclear weapon to win a war, they'll do it. And Putin has actually been preparing his population for a possible nuclear counterstrike. About a year and a half ago now, he had a nuclear drill, and he got a very significant percentage of the Russian population safely into underground nuclear bunkers within about 10 to 15 minutes' time. I can't remember the exact percentage, but I think it was something like 25 to 30% of the population. And then I heard, although I don't know how certain this is, but I heard more recently he did another drill trying to up that that number. So I don't know what the numbers were on that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think he believes that he can survive a nuclear attack, which would make him that much more bold and raise the possibility of him being willing to launch a strike himself if he believes that he can survive a counterstrike. I'm not saying this will happen, but I believe the possibility is increasing monthly. The longer this war goes on, and the more the Western leaders mock him, you know, and if he wants to end this war sooner rather than later, he might use it. Then on the other hand, for all we know, you know, the World Economic Forum, which seems to want a World War III in order to introduce their Great Reset, you know, maybe he's doing this for them. I don't know. I don't know to what degree Putin is being manipulated by other people and how much he is simply his own man.
Gary, we're less than 90 seconds before the break, and just want to quick get this in, too. Not only is this issue going on with Russia and Ukraine and so forth, but there's also this growing Syrian and Russia alliance and threats against Israel. I mean, these are not lessening by any degree.
No, they aren't. In fact, in part because of Biden's policies toward Iran, Iran now is moving full speed ahead with nuclear production. In fact, Benny Gantz, Israel's defense minister, warned, this was just a couple weeks ago, that Iran is installing 1,000 advanced centrifuges at its uranium enrichment plants, and that in a matter of weeks we'll have produced enough fissile material to fuel a singular nuclear bomb. We're not looking at years down the road now or even a year. We're looking within months they will have full nuclear capacity. And so Israel is contemplating what to do right now.
Folks, we got a quick break here, and we're going to cover one other area and some of the matters that are going on with technology right now. Folks, it's all coming to a head here. Brace yourselves. Back in a minute with Gary Kaa here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, Lawrence Sullen was on my radio show. He's a retired U.S. Army Reserve Colonel, along with Bill Federer. They're warning about the fact that Joe Biden is turning the U.S. military against the American people. He's purging the military. He's used the COVID vaccine shots to do it, not honoring religious exemptions. He used critical race theory to do it, and the different branches of the military even had stand-down orders while they purge people out who would not agree with or celebrate the LGBTQ agenda. Why would anyone purge the military? Because they have plans to use the military against the American people. History backs this up. So what do we do? Colonel Sullen, in his latest article, is saying we need a state guard. He's not talking about a national guard. He's talking about an individual state guard, such as they have now in Florida and Texas. Why? To defend against a tyrannical central government. I'm Brandon House.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, Gary Ka from Hope for the World. Again, his website, folks, you'll see an article on this and other fine articles on his website. More information, GaryKa.org, Gary Ka, K-A-H, .org. Also, just wanted to remind you that recently we did an interview with Steve Miller here, 12 Mega Clues that Jesus' Return is Nearer Than Ever, foreshadows. We just talked to him last week, and all the things we're talking about are issues the concepts are there in that book. And just wanted to remind you that our VCY bookstore has that 60% off only through June the 30th at vcy.com, vcy.com, or calling 1-888-722-4829. Gary, there's another aspect to all of this, and that's this whole technology aspect. And I found it fascinating what you wrote about the CEO of Nokia and other information as far as some technology. So I know the clock is going really quickly here, but break down for us some important information.
Okay, yeah, just recently at the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos, which took place around the end of May, the CEO of Nokia, his name's Pekka Lundmark. I believe he's from Scandinavia, I'm not sure about that, but he stated that 6G would be here by 2030 and it will make smartphones obsolete. Lundmark said, quote, "By then, 2030, definitely the smartphone as we know it today will not anymore be the most common interface. Regarding the technology," he said, "many of these things will be built into our bodies," end quote. Now, he just made that statement weeks ago. In other words, the new interfacing will be human to human directly. The technology will be in your body.
Wow.
And between now and then, Lundmark said that humans will begin using smart glasses and other devices on the face. So all of this is going to be rolled out pretty quickly. And then on May 17th, just days before Lundmark made his statement, MasterCard launched a program that will allow retailers to offer biometric payment methods like facial recognition and fingerprint scanning. According to a CNBC reporter, Ryan Brown, he said users can authenticate a payment by showing their face or the palm of their hand instead of swiping their card. The technology could one day help with the development of payments infrastructure for the metaverse, which we've heard, you know, that coming about through through Facebook and them using that term. Then Brown further added, MasterCard says it plans to roll out its biometric payment program globally later this year. So again, we're not looking way in the future. This is later this year. And then also along these same lines, I did a little blurb, who owns your face, question mark. In this brave new world of artificial intelligence, social media and new imaging technologies, your face may be for sale. That's right. Clearview AI, that's the name of a company, an American company that sells facial recognition technology, has amassed a database of 10 billion images since 2020. By the end of the year, by the end of this year, it plans to have scraped 100 billion facial images from the Internet.
Wow.
It is difficult to access the company's claim, but if we take Clearview AI at face value, it has enough data to identify almost everyone on Earth and end privacy and anonymity everywhere. So these are just a few examples of the technology, much of this being rolled out later this year. And again, you've got globalist forces driving all of this, and so we're losing more and more control over our lives to these globalist forces.
It's getting more and more creepy, Gary, as well, because I have before me an article from WND.com about Alexa working on allowing conversations with dead relatives. Evidently, the software, after hearing someone's voice for less than a minute, can simulate that voice when speaking, and so working on ways in which a person could, in essence, be talking and hearing the voice of a dead relative respond to them.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I wrote in one of these articles, I said, the new 6G technologies will essentially merge the physical realm with the virtual realm and blend spirituality and technology. And that's an example of that. They're actually going to use technology to open up doors and portals that never should be opened, actually practicing occultism and people becoming involved in it, thinking it's just technology, not realizing that they're being opened up to demonic influences. It's almost unbelievable.
Gary Kaa with us today, and Gary, with just a little over 2 minutes left in the program, we apologize, listeners. We didn't have time for calls. We wanted to get this information out. But in light of all of this, Gary, is this a time for fear? Is this a time for fright? How should a Christian respond in times like these?
Well, we have to accelerate our efforts to fearlessly speak truth into our world situation. We need to seize every opportunity to share the good news of Jesus Christ and not back down just because the opposition is growing stronger. These people mean business, and this is not some kind of dress rehearsal. They're moving forward with everything. But we are to take a strong stand for the Lord and not act out of fear, reminding ourselves that God is much more powerful than these forces, and in the end, he will have the final say. And we know from Scripture that God has it under control. Mm-hmm. He knows the future before it happens. In Jesus' first coming, his life, death, resurrection, over 100 major and close to 300 minor prophecies were fulfilled. And therefore, I am confident that all those events still to come will also unfold exactly as he has said. And I draw a lot of encouragement from passages like 2 Thessalonians 2:8, describes the Lord's return. It says, "And then the lawless one, the Antichrist, will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will overthrow with the breath of his mouth and destroy by the splendor of his coming." Between now and then, yes, we're going to go through some more difficult times as we keep moving down this globalist path. But we know in the end, we are on the winning side. And so therefore, knowing what lies ahead, let's draw ever closer to Jesus. Let's walk humbly in obedience to him as we fulfill our specific individual assignments in whatever time remains, always holding on to God's promise that no matter what happens to our physical bodies, we will be victorious spiritually and eternally if we stand firm in him. And that's really what we have to every day keep in mind, that ultimately the most important thing in all this is the spiritual outcome rather than the physical.
A powerful program, powerful hour here today with Gary Kaa, folks. And you can learn more at his website, GaryKaa.org. That's K-A-H, GaryKaa.org. Gary, thank you for carving out this information for us and sharing it with our listeners here today.
Thank you, Jim. God bless you.
Gary Kaa with us today. Brace yourselves. Yes, the American decline and world government, world control is approaching this world. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.